Yesterday afternoon, I went out, my wife and I went out and joined with the rest of most of our family and celebrated our oldest grandson's 9th birthday. And so we went to this place out in Plano. It's kind of like Main Event, but it's Plano's version of that. It's called
Pinstack.
And, you know, I walked in and, you know, it's like sensory overload the moment you walk into it. And, but it was pretty cool. And he had, 6 or 7 of his little buddies from school that were there for the fun. And it really was. And they bowled and they did stuff. And then they had, you know, an hour or two of kind of unlimited play in the game area. But one of the things they have at this place is they've got some massive climbing walls for little kids. And then they also have, this indoor climbing apparatus where you get into a really big size harness, and they strap you on to a rope, and the rope straps onto this thing that carries you around, and they go up about 20 or 25 feet, and they get to walk on ropes, and they get to go on little steps. And so my grandson is there, and he has two of his buddies that are going, "Yes, we're going." And I look at my grandson's face, and it's like, "Yeah, we're going. I want to do that." And it's like, it was that crux moment in a little boy's life, whether he was going to give in to his friends or give in to his fear. And so he definitely gave in to his friends. And he got in line and strapped into this thing. And I'm there with him the whole time. And of course, rock climbing and rappelling and all that stuff is stuff that I did in my past. And so I know the fears and so forth, even though it's on a small scale. And so he's there, and they're strapping him into the harness and hooking on the carabiners and pulling it over, and his little eyes are getting big as the, you know, and he's looking up to where he's going to go, and it's you know, it is up above, you know, it's definitely up above our ceiling height and then beyond, and I'm there with him and going, "Holden, you can do this, man. You can do this. Don't give in to your fear. It's all right. You can do it. And you can trust the rope and you can trust the harness. If you fall, it'll catch you. You'll not get hurt. You can do it." And the whole time, I'm just cheering him on. "You can do it." And he takes his steps up the stairs and gets up to the top platform. And the first one he's got to go across, he's, you know, I mean, it's as if I can see his little heart pumping, you know, out of his skin, you know. And he takes his first step, and his leg is shaking, and he gets it, and he's kind of spread-eagled, you know, on the first step. It's like, "Go, you can do it!" You know, Grandpa's down there telling him everything, and he ended up, and he did it. He did, but the whole time, at least the first half of it, I'm encouraging him to do it. "You can do it, you can do it." And he got down, and he was so proud of himself, and you know that feeling. Any of you that are parents or grandparents, you know how that goes. I want to tell you something, and this is, you are either a recipient or a giver when it comes to this. We all need people who will faithfully and regularly tell us and show us that following Jesus is worth it. We need each other for this. We need people who are around us who will tell us out loud that Jesus is the difference maker, that He is the real deal. Because every one of us walk through valleys and shadows where doubt creeps in and fear begins to overtake us, and we begin to second guess with a little pea brain sometimes that those things that we always believed, well, maybe it's not as we always believed. And those things begin to creep in. That's why we need people who are standing at the base of the mountain cheering us, "You can do this. It works. Don't turn back. Keep going." Because we are either one or the other, or even both at the same time. We are either the cheerleaders or the cheer receivers.
or both.
In that same passage that we read, Jesus is asked a question by his followers, and it was kind of part of a larger dialogue about Jesus saying that there was going to come a time that he was going to leave the earth and to go be with the Father in heaven, and that we here on earth were going to be left to follow his teaching and to be empowered by his Spirit, but physically he was no longer going to be present. And as part of that dialogue, that these words that Jesus said, up here, and we have read them and said them untold times, because Jesus, when he was asked, "Where are you going?" and where you're going, we don't know where that is. We don't even know the way to where you are going. And Jesus answered these amazing words where he said, "I am the way and the truth and the life. Me, personally, I am the way. Don't have to worry anymore. I am the way and the truth and the life." And in a world that is absolutely packed with different religions these days and different philosophies and theologies and spiritual paths that you can opt into at any point in time or opt out of or get on somebody else's road and follow that one for a while and see if that one works. There is no one like Jesus. There never has been and there never will be. Jesus, who claimed not just to know about God, or the one who was a great teacher about the things of God. I can't tell you how many times people have said to me in the midst of conversation, "Well, yeah, you know, there's no doubt Jesus was a great teacher." Yeah, you're right. There is no doubt Jesus was a great teacher. Or that he was somebody who even lived a good and godly life. There are people who have no real belief in Jesus as the Savior and the Son of God, who will stipulate that he may have been the greatest person to ever walk on the earth. That he lived a morally perfect life, and that he did years and years and years of good things, of helping people and so forth, and that his legends are probably, many of them probably true about the things that he did. And my answer to that is, no, that is not sufficient for me. Because Jesus, unlike all of the other religious leaders who have walked the face of the earth since really the beginning of humanity, Jesus is the only one who claimed to be God and backed it up. He taught with the authority and the words of God. Not just good teaching, but with authority. He didn't just live a good life. He didn't just live a good moral life. He lived a sinless life and became the perfect example of how we are to live. He proved he was God. He proved it by his birth. He proved it by the 33 or so years that he lived on the earth. He proved it in his death on the cross. He proved it in his resurrection, that he wasn't just a man, but that he was God in the flesh. I have come to realize through the years, this is very personal for me to say this, I've come to realize just how important it is to me to know that there are others who have walked a life of faith before me. I can tell you without a doubt that I would not be here if it were not for them. And the source of strength and encouragement that I received from those people. People I've met personally, books that they have written, stories of men and women of faith that rocked my world as they were passed down to me. And I heard those stories or read about them and sat and said, there is no way I could be that kind of person. And yet they were there and they were presented in front of me. And slowly but surely, the truth of their lives and the impact of this God-man began to seep into my consciousness and then ultimately saturated my heart and affected the way that I lived. People who have meant so much to me and who've been there, and they've stood at the base of the mountain and cheered for me to keep going and that I could do it. People who told me that it was worth it, even though it didn't seem like it was worth it at the time. There were people who said it was. I would not be here without them. And so some years ago, I began to realize that I had become one of those people. I had become a cheerleader. I had become a person that was saying to other people, you can walk this life of faith and it will be worth it. Because it's through all the things that I have been through in my life, just like you. I mean, there is nothing special about my life. Trust me. But through this journey that I've been on, I've become convinced that nothing is more real. Nothing is more trustworthy. Nothing is more authentic. Nothing is more reliable than Jesus. Nothing. And that there was nothing more important in life for me to do than to spend my days passing that information on, both in the way that I live and the words that I say. All right? There was a time when Jesus was teaching. It's in the book of Luke. He was teaching, and he was teaching some really, really hard things to his followers. Some of the stuff where, if I were Jesus, I would have said, okay, look, I'm telling you to do this. Trust me, you can do it. Because I would have seen, probably like he saw, the looks in his disciples' eyes and that faint shaking of their head going, are you kidding me? This is what you're going to require of me? You know that look? Yeah, I there's no doubt that Jesus saw those looks. There's no doubt that he told them what they needed to do and encouraged them that they could do it. And it was at the end of this teaching that we get to chapter 15. This was in chapter 14. We get to the end of this. I mean, I'm telling you, chapter 14 of Luke is one of the hardest chapters of the Bible to read. And I'm not even going to read it here. Okay, just trust me, it is. We have studied it many times through the years. Hard, difficult commands of Jesus, the way that he wanted them to live their lives. And so, at the end of this teaching, here's the little thing that happened. Okay? The beginning of Luke 15. It says, now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus. That's the way he normally taught. He normally taught. I was in the middle of another sentence. God, I'm an idiot. Sorry. He teached it. Yeah, okay. He was in the middle of teaching. And when he did, this was not uncommon for this to happen, is that all of the religious Jewish leaders and movers and shakers of the culture would kind of slide in. His disciples would be there in the front, and then the next layer of his followers would be there, and then the tax collectors and sinners would kind of crowd in to see if they could get close enough to hear these words. And then there would be the Pharisees and the scribes who were on the side with their arms folded and with some smug looks on their face, judging what Jesus was saying and judging His life. This was sort of went on all the time. It says, now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them. Surely he is not God. God would never do such a thing. God would never lower himself to hang out with people like this." That's why the story of the incarnation of God in the form of Jesus, where God became human flesh, why it was so difficult for people to believe. Because they believed God would never lower himself to this level of humanity. And yet, not only did God lower himself to our level, Jesus, when he lived on earth, lowered himself to the level of the scum of the earth, according to the religious people, and that's who he hung out with. That's why this story of Jesus baffles people, because he didn't do it the way that everybody thought he should do it. He was so different. And even his own followers would question him all the time about why he was doing that. And so, at that point, Jesus goes, "Okay, time for another lesson." And he says this. Marshall, there. Yeah, I did. Yeah, he said Marshall. Yeah, he has a few times. "Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Doesn't he leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it?" Jesus tells these people standing there this thing that we have so labeled as a parable, a teaching lesson from Jesus about the 99 and the one. Jesus would leave the 99 sheep who are safe and secure in their pen, because he realizes that one of them has wandered outside the gate, wandered through the gate outside the fence, and is now lost. It's out there wandering around. And he says, the good shepherd will always leave the 99 who are in the pen and go hunt down the one who is lost. Okay, we who are such enlightened people, we know exactly what he's talking about. This one is not hard to figure out. But I'd like you to personalize it today. Let this story be to you and to me. One of the things that I know, and this is, you know, from a lifetime of spending time with teenagers, one of the things I know is this. Kids care about their friends. They just do. There was a time when you who are adults right now, there was a time that you cared about people way more than you do now. And it was back when you were a teenager. You cared about friends. Kids always care about friends. Kids care about what their friends think, about what they're doing, about their advice and approval. It's pretty interesting. I always thought it was funny when a kid in my youth group would be facing a deep, deep, difficult challenge in their life. Who would they call first for advice? Their friends? You bet. You call your friends. Because that's how close you are with them. It wouldn't come to me, for crying out loud. Even matters about faith, they discuss with the friends. And so what's fascinating to me is that it's always, always much easier for kids to invite their friends to church than it is for their parents to invite friends to church. Why is it that when we are young, we are bold? We go, sure, come to my church. Come. I'll pick you up. Come. And friends go, well, what are you going to do there? You go, I don't know. Just come anyway. You're my friend. You're my friend. Come. This is something I do. Come with me. I love that. I love that about kids. So funny. We had a conversation in youth group this morning, because I said to our youth group, we're going on our mission trip this spring. And we're this is going to sound like a commercial. Sort of is, I guess. We're going to go down there. We're going to go down there during spring break. And we're going to help a family get back in their home. It's going to be pretty awesome. There's going to be ways that our whole church family can participate in this effort, you know, to help these kids go down and do this. But I said to him, I go, look, invite a friend. Invite a friend. And you know what? There's not a single one of the kids in our youth group that are going to have any difficulty inviting a friend to come and join us. Now, they may say no. You know? Got a ski trip to go on, you know? Got a this, got a that. But they'll invite a friend to come. Definitely. But the older we get as adults, it seems the more we are drawn inward to our own world, into ourselves, taking care of our own business, spending our days and our hours doing what we need done for us. I get it. The older we get, the more complicated our world gets. Most of us sit around and go, God, wouldn't it be great to be a teenager again? I wouldn't have all these responsibilities.
No,
it's really, yeah, thank you. It's really not, but we kind of con ourselves into believing that there was a day and a time where life was simpler when we were younger. And, you know, we're busy with jobs and being married and raising the kids and owning a home and paying for a home and the demands of life. And there's just not a whole lot of room for other people in our lives like there was when we were young. Hey, just being part of the 99 is pretty demanding, you know? Okay? It's a lot of work just staying in the pen, doing stuff that sheep do inside the pen. Okay? We don't even want to wander outside anyway. There's no, don't worry about me getting lost. I'm not going anywhere. Okay? I just want to get in here, get my reward, and get done. Okay? And you know, every one of you better be laughing nervously. Okay? Because truth is, I'm not being funny on this one. All right? Here's what I want you to see today. I want you to see the one. That's who I want you to see today. The one. The shepherd leaves the 99 and looks for the one. I don't want to make this too complicated because it really isn't. The one is most important because the 99 are already in. It's a spiritual principle. It may even be Jesus' plan, kind of disguised. Jesus had said earlier when he was talking, it was in the story of Zacchaeus, and some of us may remember the wee little man. And he said in that story, as he proclaimed his purpose for being on earth, I have come to seek and to save the lost. You know what Jesus was doing on earth? He came to seek and save the one. The one. At a point in time, I was the one. I was. You were. I was the one he found. I was the one that he rescued. Maybe you were that one at one time, and you know it. There's something about this leaving the 99 and looking for the one that feels, at least it did this week, and it still does today, it feels rather strategic to me. Like it's a plan of action, maybe. You think? Go look for one. Pay attention to one. I mean, let's be frank with each other on this one. Our sphere of influence that we have personally is really pretty small in the big picture. But it is still profound for those that we have interaction with. outside of our own family, our blood unit, outside of our family, we all have a pretty small group that we are really capable of influencing. It's pretty small, but it's there for every one of us. And the truth is, you and I can only reach certain people. Now, I said to these guys today in youth group, I said, you know, I can't go where you go. I can't go on your campus. I can't, you know, that's your audience. That's not my audience. You can only do so much. But maybe if each one of us did our part, just our part, not doing anybody else's part, if each one of us did our part, carried our weight, gave our best to God's plan, well, life might end up being a whole lot different for some people. It might end up being a whole lot different for one. Because our world is full of ones. Just ones. I have no doubt in my mind, you may doubt this, but I have no doubt about you and about this, that God has you personally strategically placed to help someone on their journey. I have no doubt about that. The path that you walk, the people that you are around, what you do with your day at any given point in time, I have no doubt that God has kind of placed you where you are to be used by Him to help somebody just like somebody helped you on your spiritual journey. You are there to help them. Over my life, this long life, I have had a bunch of preachers. I've had a bunch of ministers who helped me along my way. I was reminiscing this week about all of these great men and women who are part of ministry leadership, who played a role in my life somewhere along the way. But the true influencers in my life, the people who really showed me how I was to live and what was to be the most important, the people that pulled me along when I wanted to quit, the people who had faith in me when I didn't have faith in myself, people that taught me and treated me as the one, they were simply friends of mine who laid aside their own plans and their own agenda, and they taught me and they loved me and they showed me what was most important by both their words and the way that they lived. I am here today because of them. I'm not here today because of some great thing I ever did. It was because God used people to invest in my life along the way. And I stopped being the one and I became part of the 99 and I got my job description. And make no mistake, my job description isn't being a minister of a church. My job description is simply being one of the 99. With a job to look out for the one. So I'm going to have the band come up and get ready, but don't miss this that I'm going to say, because I'm done here in a minute or so. Here's my question for you today, every one of us here. As you leave the building today, who's your one right now? And you go, I got 30. I realize that. Put them in order. And then pick the one. You start with one. Who's your one? Is it your neighbor? Is it your classmate? Is it a friend at work? Who, who's the person that God has laid on your heart today, this week? Who's a person that you know in your heart they're probably one who is out there wandering and not part of the 99? You know it. Now, you could get close enough to them and find out, no, they really weren't wandering out there at all. But you won't know until you ask. Find out. Who's the one? Who is the one? Who's the friend that you carry on your heart? Look, and I'm even going so far as to say, don't include your family on this. That's your job. Okay? Your job is to care about your family. Okay? There's room in your life for somebody other than your family. Who's your one? Who are they? Jesus was once asked, Jesus, what is the, of all of God's commandments, what's the greatest one? What is the greatest commandment of all? Jesus did not hesitate in his answer. He didn't hesitate. You've seen it before. This was his answer. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and the greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. There's a job that all of the 99 have. To love God and to show that we love God by loving people. And Jesus gave us a plan. Love them one at a time. Love people one at a time. You don't love groups, you love one. You love one at a time. We cannot save anybody. That's not our job. That's between them and God. We can't make anybody have faith, but we can live our lives with integrity and with love and with compassion to people who have needs. And God will use us for their benefit so that the one can become part of the 99 and get their job for life.